Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm Holly Barreto, Chair of the Adult Education Committee, and this is all I'm going to say today because Sally Zink is in charge. Passing it over to you, Sally.
Thank you, and good morning. And I want to thank Lynn. Oh, okay. It's on.
But let me turn it up.
Okay. To project, yes. As Carol will say, I don't project, except when I'm saying things that people shouldn't hear. So, yes, you did once when I was made a comment in session. That okay, I do want to thank Lynn and Holly and the Adult Education Committee for having this planning this session and next week's about Arm in Arm. It does seem that there's no better way to start our Lenten sessions about our neighbors than talking about Arm in Arm. I'm going to start with a bit about my connection with Arm in Arm, and then I'll introduce you to David Fox, the Executive Director, who will give you a quick tour of Arm in Arm's past, present, and future, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. As many of you may know, Arm in Arm, what was then Crisis Ministry, was established about 44 years ago by our church and Trinity Episcopal Church. I first became involved with Crisis Ministry about 30 years ago when a friend and an actual neighbor and a member of this church who was on the board asked if I would join the board. They were in need of a new treasurer, and I, for not only Crisis Ministry, but for Princeton Outreach Projects, which was the umbrella not-for-profit organization that Trinity and Nassau had founded. In those days, the treasurer meant being a bookkeeper, an accountant, overall financial officer. The offices of Crisis Ministry were in the lower level here, but they were in what's now the nursery. And the services being provided were bagged groceries that were bagged by volunteers, and clients and volunteers would, or clients would pick up those bags or volunteers would deliver them. We also provided some financial assistance for rent and utilities for folks who were facing eviction, as well as some financial assistance for prescription drugs. The overall budget was a mere fraction of what it is today. All but a few of the staff were volunteers. So for about 5 years, I found myself on Saturday mornings down in the basement, posting transactions and balancing accounts and creating financial reports and tax returns. Fast forward about 25 years, and I had retired and stopped racking up miles on airlines and New Jersey Transit. And again, I was asked if I was interested in joining the board of Arm in Arm. And I knew that in retirement, when I would have more time, that I did want to spend more time volunteering, but asked myself, why Arm in Arm? Is Arm in Arm the right fit? So trying to articulate this, for me, sort of became a mashup of Micah 6:8, the Lord's Prayer, and the parable of the Good Samaritan. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? To walk humbly, that is, to live ever mindful of the gifts that God has given us, to do justice, to reflect the kingdom come on earth, and to show kindness to our neighbors, our co-inhabitants of this earth. So what are my gifts? I did spend over 40 years working in financial services, and I can and do use this experience and knowledge, that is, these gifts, in serving Arm in Arm. So check on that account. But beyond that, I want to talk a little more specifically about how I feel tied to Arm in Arm and its mission particularly around food insecurity. I grew up in a Southern family where, in a Southern community where you cannot have a gathering, a meeting, without food being served. Being able to provide food and shelter, but first and foremost, food, good nutritional food for your family, and serving it with dignity is really basic. Food is the embodiment of love and kindness and gratitude. Those of you who heard Scott Harmon last month in one of these adult ed sessions, he talked about at Appalachian Service Project, how at the end of a week of working, his team was served this amazing barbecue meal by the family that was there, and Ron and I and at ASP had the same experience with a family who insisted on serving us lunch after we'd worked on their house all week. We also had, Ron and I also had a similar experience in Guatemala. We went down some years ago and spent a week in the summer building a cinder block, one-room cinder block house for a family that replaced the lean-to house, family of seven, that they had been living in. And when the structure was complete, they insisted on preparing and serving us a wonderful dinner by way of thanks in what was now their new home. So it breaks my heart to think that we have neighbors, real neighbors, in Princeton and just down the road in Trenton and throughout Mercer County who lack good, healthy food for their families and food that they can share with their neighbors. I have seen Arm in Arm grow into an organization that is vital to those in this community on the margins. Neighbors whose numbers unfortunately have grown in kind. I am most pleased with the seriousness with which Arm in Arm partners with the community to try to ensure that all have the most basic needs of healthy food and safe shelter and, as possible, livelihood to maintain these. I am extremely grateful for Nassau's ongoing continued support of Arm in Arm, both through our mission budget and the generous individual congregants who, particularly those of you during this Valentine's for Food campaign that has just started as we mark the 20th anniversary of that, and hopefully we'll have record giving in honor of that. So that's my story, but now that leads me to introduce David Fox, who is the executive director of Arm in Arm and has been for the past 4 years. 4 years. January 2020, David stepped into this role. Think about it, but more of that in a moment. First, I'll give you the facts of his experience. David Fox has been in the field of human services for more than 20 years, leading in fundraising at organizations across New Jersey. Before coming to Arm in Arm, David served as Director of Development at Bonnie Bray, the New Jersey School and Residential Treatment Center that serves boys and young men in crisis with comprehensive care and education to transform their lives. Prior to Bonnie Bray, David held positions of increasing responsibility at Covenant House, organization providing shelter and supportive services to young people facing homelessness. David holds PhD and Master of Philosophy degrees from Drew University, as well as a Master of Divinity degree from Princeton Theological Seminary, and a Master of Theology from St. Vladimir's Orthodox Theological Seminary. He holds a certificate in executive nonprofit leadership from Fairleigh Dickinson University. So David brought all this valuable experience to Arm in Arm when he began his tenure as executive director. New to this position in the first days of the COVID crisis, David steered Arm in Arm through an incredibly challenging time. In a matter of days, volunteer networks had dried up, The pantry and office visit models were no longer viable. New ways to obtain and deliver food and other services safely had to be developed. You get it, a whole new ball game, a whole new playbook, and for David, in an organization and community all new to him. With the input and cooperation and faith of an engaged board of directors and dedicated staff, David has overseen a transformation of Arms on Arms programs that have resulted in unprecedented levels of service to a low-income community that was disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. By April of 2023, Arm in Arm's level of service was double the pre-pandemic baseline numbers, and today has increased, and today this need has increased. David continues to lead Arm in Arm in evolving and transforming the program delivery to serve equitably and efficiently and to best meet the needs of our neighbors. I am thankful to have the opportunity to work with Arm in Arm, and specifically with David, who I will now turn this over to.
Thank you, Sally. Well, it's great to be here, and thank you for your gracious words, Sally. This went, so much smoother than the usual Finance Committee meeting, so I'm really great. Knowing that Sally is there and having her stamp on things always makes everything go great, really. So thank you, Sally, for your service. I want to run through, because, in the interest of time, I thought I'd run through a PowerPoint slide that would lead us through a little bit of the history and then talk a little bit about what's going on and then have some time for you to ask questions, because I want you to be able to feel as though you can learn as much as you can about what we're seeing about people in need right now. Remember what we do, right? We do the basics. We help people with food, housing, and work. Those are the basics. And I know over years that's evolved a lot. Let me go to the next slide, if you will. Oh, by the way, Maureen Hunt here, who is graciously helping me with some of these details, is our chief development officer. So a lot of the credit for our ability to be able to grow and to engage new communities and people really goes to her and her team. She's done extraordinary work. So thank you for being here, Maureen, as well. Help Began. Some of you know this better than I do. You were here, and so I learned a little bit by doing this, and still there's a lot of details that I still am yet to know. But there was a lot of groundwork built 1978 to 1979, and I think the connection with Princeton Seminary is a really interesting one, and particularly with this community. I want to say to you, you heard a little bit about my background. Even though we're no longer called the crisis ministry, the way we serve people is crisis ministry. You should know that. We care with people with respect and with love, compassion, and it shows. The people who come to our doors still feel that sense of ministry, the way we conduct what we do. But it was begun by a team of people here, and really a Reverend Aldridge was the first an associate pastor who, really started putting together, with the help of this community, and I know the Trinity Church was a part of this, plans for a ministry that was needed. And I have to tell you, as someone who's also spent a lot of time in faith communities, what you did here was really bold. I look at this as a template for other faith communities, because what you do is you saw groups of people in need, and you responded in a big way. And I think establishing a not-for-profit, specifically doing that, was a really wise thing to do, because it allowed people who know how to do those work to do that, and then the extension of the ministry can kind of take root. So the crisis ministry was founded in 1980, and the mission was to reach out with short-term assistance to people with emergency unmet needs. And I think that's really important. Initially, it was about helping people get out of the emergent crisis for today. And you're going to hear as we evolve, we do that. We do that in bold ways, but we also do a little bit more of a sustaining help as well. So in 1981, we opened our doors here at Nassau Presbyterian Church, and it's really great that the doors are still open downstairs. And I really want to thank you again, because not only have you opened the doors, you've allowed us to open more doors and take more space. That's really been great. And during the pandemic, that was really terrific, because we were able to come down and pack the fresh vegetables and things like that. You were so gracious about allowing us to use that space. And we have a great plan to partner and make the facility even more welcoming and beautify it. 1983 to 1987, the Reverend Carol Kerbel. I think it's interesting to note that you're going to hear this name come up a little later. Again, another clergy that's involved. She was an Episcopal deacon and was appointed to lead the crisis ministry as its first director. We got into 8 outreach programs, and we got into a latchkey program at that time and an after-school program. You can see basically the gist here over the years is that things grew, right? Programs were added. The Trenton after-school program was something that was part of the mission with Crisis Ministry, a 501c3 organization Sally alluded to, Princeton Outreach Projects. This was an umbrella organization that did some really great work in the Trenton area specifically. And you had the Reverend Sally Osborne. I know that that's a name that still continues to have a lot of resonance at the organization. But a Methodist minister down the street. So kind of a nice ecumenical effort there with different clergy. And it says a lot about this community too. You know, and by the way, I lived, our first couple years of marriage with my wife and I, we've been married for over 30 years, happened here. And I always knew this was a really smart community, obviously, but I never realized how compassionate Princeton area is. So when you talk about the way that these faith communities are working together, it really speaks to that. In 2000, the direct aid budget reaches $500,000, which is that's significant, when you talk about a very grassroots organization. We serviced about 850 households at that time who were visiting our pantries, okay? And again, the model at that time with the pantry model is really kind of what, even today, we're in the midst of, and I'll allude to at the very end, discussing, what's the best way moving forward to help people with food. And the your choice pantry model is up there. That's kind of a really humane way, right? People can come just as we want to be able to go and shop and get what we want. We want everybody to have that same experience, right? So the your choice pantry was a really great way to do that. Also, the ministry, crisis ministry operations moved to 123 East Hanover Street, right, from 2001. Which continued to be the home there for a long time, and that's the first place that I encountered, arm in arm myself. We added a workforce development program. Of course, when we're going to talk about this, we're going to delve into the deeper underlying issues behind hunger and housing, and what we're going to see is that work is an essential part of being able to sustain yourself. And you're also going to see one of the things that is very true not only then but now is that most of the people we work with are working themselves. They're actually struggling to actually just make ends meet, but they're engaged, and a lot of the help they get then and now is episodic, right? They're out of work, there's been a crisis, they come and we help them with a workforce development program, we help them actually get work too. The Reverend Jarrett Kerbel, who was the son of the Crisis Ministry's first director, was hired in 2008. Again, tradition there of a clergy serving here. That's also an interesting year because, yes, we can. Some of you may be familiar with this local group. This came out of a political kind of movement that then was transformed into a serving the community movement. And so we still have one of our most vibrant groups of volunteers is Yes, We Can. All the way back from 2008, they get together, they work at market fairs, and they work with local providers to be able to send a lot of food to us. All right, next. And then we went through on East Hanover Street. We added another building over there, again, through a legacy gift we're grateful for Martha Reed. And so then we celebrated in 2010, our 30th anniversary. And then during that time also, there was a charitable trust gift that was able to be made available to provide a coordinator here at the Princeton Pantry. People, one of the things that's really important is we don't just put food and we don't put checks on the street for people to pick up. What's important not only is what we serve, but how we serve it. And the staff that we have are probably as impactful, if not more, than what we actually deliver, because they're able to not only be a sympathetic ear, which is a lot of times what people need the most. But also, a lot of them have been through the experience themselves, and they're able to navigate through these issues, not only providing the directory we have, but connecting them to other resources, right? So sometimes it's just good to know that you're not alone, right, to get through these difficult moments. So being able to provide for a staff member was really important. And then my immediate predecessor, Carolyn Biondi, who was one of the reasons why I took this job, by the way, too. I had a really good conversation with her. She convinced me, and I think, you know, we had kind of hit it off in terms of we were really a match for the different eras that maybe were needed at Arm in Arm. So Carolyn came on board. She had a Master of Social Work, so she brought a lot of that more professional experience here, and you're going to see some of the programs that she added were a result of that and her spirit of growth. Again, it's interesting for me to look that she had a baptism by fire too, as well as with a fire that happened on her immediate thing, and that was one of the transitioning stories as well. But we had, you'll see that with a fire that destroyed the food pantry, we had an incredible amount of people reaching out, and that's always a great thing, isn't it? In the greatest need, you also see the greatest gifts. And when humanity is its best, often. Well, we added a housing stability case management team, and I know that's one of our staff members. Cynthia Mendez, who's still working with us, was also added. This provided a really great thing. Not only, again, this stability is to help people make sure they don't get evicted by giving them rental assistance in the moment, but then there was also a longer term, month by month case management and also direct aid support that help people navigate through, you know, making sure they don't go back again. All right, and then we're going to get to our most recent history pretty quickly here. The next slide, we changed our name to Crisis Ministry to reflect, I guess, the sense of how the Crisis Ministry has grown to include a lot of, you know, participants within the community, not only this church and others, but also corporations. We became much more involved with the foundations locally, and then several of the corporations have stepped up as well. So there was a more, I guess, comprehensive sounding name, at least that was presented to me. But again, as I mentioned, the crisis ministry is still being done. So we changed to Arm in Arm. All right, and then we added a representative to payee program. Now that's an important program because that works with the people that are really at the most critical. Who are these folks? They are folks that are receiving long-time assistance that have a hard time managing that assistance. So, I mean, think about it in your own experience. A lot of times your family members or the friends, they help, you know, manage what we have and get the what needs to be done. But at that, for these folks, we have about 140 or so on a regular way. They have no support. And sometimes they're wrestling with issues, whether it's addictions, mental health, others, that prevent them from taking care of themselves. And so what happens is we become a payee. We take their resources and we help them make sure they have their rent provided and other bills paid, and then also to make sure they have a cash flow for their own needs. And that's really a critical role here. And we have an extraordinary woman who does this, who herself is extraordinary by taking on 20 plus foster children over her lifetime. So she's an extraordinary woman who works with people, sometimes in difficult circumstances. And then we added the All Kids Thrive program under Carolyn's leadership as well. This is really a great thing because this is an embedded work in the lives and in the communities of Trenton. We added financial fitness workshops, which actually have continued to grow. We've seen those being needed. People really want to learn, you know, how to budget, how to do these things. We think that's really important. And then the Still Standing program targets really single mothers, and it's a supportive group as well. So we add a lot of these overlaying services to these folks, but also have a community of support. You heard Sally talk about it. Yeah, it was quite a year to come in. I think in some ways it was great because I didn't know any better. So we just said, what do we need to do to get by? And the growth was really just because, you know, it was interesting. Carolyn and the board of directors and your community had built such a reputation that, you know what, when things happen with the pandemic, all of a sudden, a lot of organizations, including the mayor of Princeton and the superintendent of schools, was saying, hey, Arm in Arm, what can you do? They were leaning on us to be able to respond. So we did what we could do. We had to really change, and we, you know the story. Basically, we went from, you know, 100% almost in person, which is a great way to do it, but it's a very dangerous way to do it during a pandemic, right? Having people come and being in a room together. So what we did is we went on the mobile. And this, again, this community and, you know, your pastor here, your senior pastor, Dave Davis, is among those people who jumped in the car and went out and went door to door. And we did that. We knocked on doors. We did it in a safe way. And we repurposed our staff to do that. Well, we got through that part of it. And then we have a blended model that we've kept today, which is basically people come to our doors. They receive pre-bagged food. And it allows us to go high levels. Okay. So we moved in 2022. East Hanover Street was great. We loved it. Again, another Presbyterian church was really helpful over there in Trenton. But it really is an aging property, and it was really hard to get, especially when we're doubling the levels of food. It's hard to get trucks in and out of there. So long and short is when we had our new model of mobile delivery, the Mill One site, which is technically in Hamilton Township, but right next to Trenton, was an ideal location because they had a space that freed up where we had the commercial warehouse. So we had this great loading bay. If you haven't been, if you come for a tour, I'd love to give you a tour if you haven't come. But our trucks were able to pull up and then load the food and deliver them to all the different places we need. So when we went mobile, we saw that the Mill One was really ideal. The other thing we did is we decreased the amount of office space, right? Because now we were doing also housing remotely. That's another transformation. Pre-pandemic, people were coming and having to line up downtown Trenton and wait for a time to be able to come in and bring all of their materials, social security card, proof of this, proof of that, in their bag. Sometimes they have to take the kids out of school and get out of work. They wait. And they were only here at that time. Our average gift at that time was about $484. And where would they find the rest of those resources? You had to get a promissory note and go to other places like Catholic Charities, Homefront, and others to be able to pull together, cobble together the need. What we did during the pandemic is, number one, we do those things remotely now. We set up and do a lot of casework over the phone. That really was great for the people we serve because they could do it from work, they could do it on lunch break, they could do it from home, they could do it while their kids were home during the pandemic. So it was quicker, it was more efficient that way. And then also we went from about 484, as I said, to about $2,000 to $2,500 per family in need. And that was great because we made people whole in one stop. That was the key. For me, it's not as humane to be able to have to go door to door and have to cobble together the assistance. We did it all in one shot. Okay, so here we are. That's where we are today. What are we seeing? As I mentioned a few minutes ago. Yeah, go ahead, go to that. I think this says it all. This summarizes why people come to us. There's a big gap between what it takes to live in Mercer County and what all of our clients are actually making. That's the reason. So food and housing are all related, meaning if people come to our doors to get food, it helps them pay the rent. If we help them pay the rent, they can get more food. So it's not as though people are, thank God, you know, literally starving in Mercer County. The problem is the cost and the availability of food is so prohibitive that people don't get either good food, or it's costly to get the food, or they're suffering on another part of their life. So I'm going to talk a little in just a few moments about rent and what we're seeing, extraordinary differences there. But this says, I think, a lot. All right? So let's go to the next. So by the numbers.
This is the salary range of an arm-in-arm client from $20,000 to $40,000. And the cost to live in Mercer County is between, you know, $65,000 and
$75,000. Oh, that's
the
average for that?
Yes.
Sorry. We looked at this, and I looked at my time, and I'm trying. But so yes. So you're talking about, let's just say, you're bringing home for a small family on average $30,000. But it costs about $60,000 to live. How do you make it up? You come to places like Arm and Arm, or you pantry hop, right? So cost of living is a thing. And I think it's important to understand that in places like Princeton, sometimes this can be even more challenging, obviously. Poverty becomes even more difficult in places of affluence because you feel different, right? And you feel also like, wow, it's even more of a battle. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. So today, what's extraordinary is the level of service, right? So last year, nearly 50,000 either visits or deliveries of food. And we are going door to door in some places still. We are having people come to places like Princeton. This also includes our bricks and mortar pantry in Trenton, Hudson Street. And we also have several mobile pantries. Probably the most regular one is a partnership with Capital Health. So we go to Capital Health sites once a week. We set up there at a different hospital site. And we also have our site downtown Trenton. Currently, we're at Academy Street, and we're doing that as well. When you put all that together, that's a lot of deliveries of food. You're going to see that over the years, this has decreased by about 50%, the amount of families. But the amount that we're giving each family has about quadrupled, really. And that's purposeful. We're part of a larger effort. We work in concert with other providers. And what we're saying is, in the way the other public money is also divvied up is, and this is partly we were influential in this because we made our case, let's have groups make people whole, right? And serve fewer people but make them whole by the amount that they serve, again, to save people from having to tell the story. It's also an efficient way to do it because you don't have to have caseworkers go over and over with all these different folks their stories. All right, and then we have about 140 rep payee customers as well, or clients as well. You heard me talk about what that is. And this is an important work that I didn't talk about, but workforce experience, there's a couple of different components of this that I can get in more detail, but one of the things that we do is to help people get licensed. This is the catch-22. I need a job to be able to afford to live. But how do I get a job? I need to be able to drive. I need a valid driver's license. But I have fines that I can't pay. How do I get my driver's license? So you can't work because you can't get a license and so forth. So what we do is we work with people, work through a case management thing. We help them get their licenses restored so they can go out and work. So 35 people were able to do that, and that's really transformative. And we can go to the next slide, but it's important to understand that about a quarter to a third of our people that we are working at Arm in Arm are former clients. One way we've helped them is we've had clients that go from helping them get their licenses to becoming drivers, you know, for us. So that's a cool transformation, right?
How are the 208 and 140 identified and selected?
Folks, in this category, the households, people find us. We advertise, we go to other providers. We're also known at the courts. So, for instance, if somebody's having an evictions issue, they know what we are. We have a presence other places. When we are serving food, we're advertising help with housing. When we're in the community delivering, we also advertise this. So we get probably on average about 300 plus calls a month from people who need assistance. What happens is we bring them through a process to see if they qualify for help, and then you'll see that number go down to actually the amount of people that we actually can help. And that's not all a bad thing. There are some folks that are able to get on their feet on their own. Does that answer your question about how people find us?
Would that include undocumented?
It does. There are some forms or pockets of aid. When we talk about the aid we're getting public streams of income that we have certain requirements, and we get private streams of income that have other requirements. And so it's a real kind of, let's say, case management work to be able to say, okay, we can help this person with these resources, and so not all of the resources help the undocumented, are able to help the undocumented, but we use other pockets that can to do what we can do for people in need. How about the next slide?
Tell them where RepPay people come from.
Oh, the RepPay people are, Social Security actually sends us candidates. Basically, we partner with Social Security as their payee to hold those resources for them. And so they have to be qualified through Social Security to be able to do that. It's a choice on their part. They're not mandated. They can decide, hey, I don't need a payee. But what happens is, for a small fee to help them manage their resources, we end up saving them a lot of money. A lot of times what happens, people say, I'll be okay. And then they start, and then they don't pay a rent, or they have a hard time with this. So then that's how they often come back and request a little help. And by the way, we're the only one in Mercer County that actually offers this service. So this is an important thing that people seek us for.
Are many of the people that you work with mentally ill?
Yeah, we do get a mix of different presenting issues, some of which are different grades of mental health. We don't do in our work, now, this is probably where she does the deepest dive case management, in other words, the longest term relationships. And some of those folks do have mental health issues. Sometimes it's an addictions issue. Sometimes they're what we call co-occurring, which is both, right? So I would say Suzanne, a lot of the work we do over here, we're meeting with people and it's not a long-term relationship, not as long-term. It's not deep dive case management. We don't have, you know, clinicians working with us that are doing that kind of deep work. But Suzanne's the one that has long-term relationships, you could say, and probably among the most. All right. Any other questions on the slide? We do. There's only so much we can do here. We do a lot of referrals for that longer-term help. Typically, when the people come to us with the Rep Payee program, they've already gone through that. They've already qualified for that. Some of the folks for the other assistance, we start them. We have to be careful we always have to make sure they get the choice to be able to do that. So what we often do is we partner with another organization to be able to say, hey, give them good advice, right? Professional advice. All right. So anyway, where we are. We're still at Nassau downstairs again. Oh, another question?
So you did cover the food and housing, and you briefly covered on the work.
Right.
On the job license. Any additional work has been done? And particularly if you look at the household you serve, what's the percentage of working kind of age group versus actually the retiree?
It's a really great question. The last one, we are developing that answer more carefully now, and I'll tell you why. During the pandemic, what happened is pre-pandemic people were coming to us and we were registering them. We got a lot of biographical information. Probably 60 to 80 people would come per 3.5 hours, okay, session. So we spent a lot of time pre-pandemic working with not 3.5 hours for each person, 3.5 hours total. So you'd probably go through and have maybe a 20 to 40 minute time at Arm in Arm to get food, during which you would register, okay? So we would get a lot of that biographical information. When the pandemic hit, we and all other providers were not required by federal requirements to take that information. So we just gave food to anybody who came. So we didn't have a lot of that data for about 2 years. We did gift card registrations once, a year for those, so we had a little bit of that. In other words, it was just a little slice. We've just, to leap ahead, we've just basically gotten QR codes, okay, that allows us to do what? Bring people through and help them in a quick way, because remember, pre-pandemic, we were serving 60 to 80 people a time. Now we're at 200 families. So you have the same time, it's quick. And people, by the way, when we surveyed them, they said they like the other way. They like to be able to bring their food and leave, not have to stay. So the quick answer I'm going to give to you is we don't really have a great understanding of that proportion today. What we do understand is that about 80% of the people come to us based on the data that we do have since April. 80% of those people come 3 times or less a month. That was a surprise to me. I thought a lot more people were coming all the time. So we are seeing, if we couple that, so what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of people come for a little bit of time and then leave and not need us. The other thing that we're seeing is about 200 new families a month we're seeing. This is part of the effect now of the recent immigration. We are definitely seeing the impact of higher levels of immigration. So, to kind of dovetail all those little facts without giving you the exact, we're seeing a proportion now of a lot more younger families, working families, and fewer that are on fixed income at senior centers. The way we've tried to address the seniors, especially in Princeton, is that we've continued to be able to deliver those folks door to door. Okay, so that proportion that we're doing from here, what's the proportion from Princeton is actually in like from a senior? I'd have to get that number and I can give that to you. I'd have to drill the number specific to Princeton here. But what I do know is that Hudson Street, for instance, we used to get a predominant amount of people that come from Trent Towers that would come down and come regularly. And now we're seeing that mix a lot bigger based on what I just shared with you. Hopefully in a year I'll have more data after about a year, because the problem with the QR code, it's been great. We've rolled it out at each site, and it's not easy. You have to have a lot of support to be able to do that with volunteers and so forth. It's working, but it's a work in progress. Three times a month. What we do know is their basic biographical information. We don't call them like a year later and say, tell me why you don't need us anymore for the food. So we don't know a lot of that. We do have, I mentioned the All Kids Thrive program, which is a blend of helping them with food and so forth. And so I can say that if you look at that template, what we know is, yes, they don't need us, because as the guy who runs the program says, they hit the ground running and then they don't need us anymore. They need us for a little bit, and then they're very resourceful. They're working. In fact, one of the techniques that's done is typically one parent, usually the male, will go out and work two or three jobs, right? Just pound work, right? And then the other parent, typically the mother, will then go to different pantries to be able to get food. So you can see they're saving on the expense and then they're bringing in the income. Very smart. And often in the beginning, they're living multi-families within under one roof. But then when they make a few dollars, they're off to the, you know, they get their own place and they don't need the food and so forth. So that's kind of another major pattern that we're seeing as well. Okay, so this is just a little sight of where we are. Again, it's a professional building that's really great. I mentioned the hub that we have there, but it also puts us into dialogue with and partnerships with other not-for-profits that are in this building. That's what's really great too, like Isles and others kind of. So slowly we've been, you know, getting to know our neighbors a little bit more and working together with them. There's been some important things that they've helped us with on the interim. And of course, you know the Princeton Pantry, you know Leticia, you know Bernard, you know our volunteers here. Some of you are among those. And this is our nice, beautiful truck. Some of you were participating in that capital campaign that took place about a year and a half ago. And the good news is that we just qualified. Again, kudos to Maureen and her team. For a big grant from the Community Food Bank of New Jersey, right? So we've gotten funds to be able to provide a new van. So we have our fleet is going to have a new this truck, and then we have the van that was 13 years old, and the van's going to have a lot more capacity, which is great. And then, again, thank you to the Mission Committee and to those who supported our efforts. We needed a new box truck, too. That was 10 years old, and that was really falling apart. Anyway, we're getting a new box truck too. So we'll have a fleet that is up to date to be able to get to all the different places we were asked to go.
What is the overall?
A little under $4 million budget a year. If that's a help to you, we have about 24 staff. Yeah.
How many volunteers?
75 on a regular way. People come in. We have groups. What's hard is that we have, you know, again, groups that come for like once in a while. So we have once a year, the Princeton track team, women's track team comes, and they bring, you know, 30 track team. We have Black Rock volunteers that come about four times a year, and they bring Johnson & Johnson has a big group. But regular volunteers, I'd say about 75, and that's really critical. I can't mention enough, because for especially the way we're doing food now with moving people through, asking for the QR code, for instance, if folks don't have a QR code, if they're new that day, they have to stand in a second line and be able to get registered. So we have the volunteers not only do the regular check-ins, which is, by the way, better for the folks, because then guess what? We make appointments. See, Princeton's always had appointments here. We've been able to handle it here. People come and it's great. It feels very humane. You come at a certain time, you come and get food. It's discreet. It's another part of why we don't dig a lot of information, discretion. Right? We respect people. It's a hard thing to have to come and ask for food. But to do all that, oftentimes we need people that are able to speak Spanish, and now we're seeing folks that are coming from Haiti, so we need somebody who can speak French or Creole. That's an important thing. So volunteers are key. I hope that, was that helpful?
So could you describe the mission of the three trucks? You have a box truck, you have this truck, and you have a van. So
yeah. So this one is really for our mobile pantries, okay? Yeah, so we drive that into a neighborhood. What we need is we need like a big parking lot, right? And we set this up. We put three tables in front. Sometimes there's an awning if it's poor weather. And we bring out all the food that's there. This can hold about enough for about 120 families. This is our mobile food truck.
And it's
refrigerated. Now, we haven't had to lean on the refrigeration so much because we usually pick things up for that morning, right? The other two are basically picking up food because this is a finished product. How do we get enough bags for 120 people? They had to be bagged. And what we do is we take the box truck, for instance, and we go out to Mercer Street Friends, and we get a big bunch of in-kind food. And then that box truck goes and picks up other places, all the different places that pick up for in-kind. I talked about Yes We Can. I talked about other corporations, churches coming to the doors here. So the box truck picks up a lot of the food. The van actually does it in another way, because we're typically either picking up or dropping off in other strategic sites. So what you see is the pickup, the bring to Mill 1, the bringing out of all the food, and then the packaging of the food at Mill 1 to pack this truck so this can do the mobile pantry. Does that make sense? So there's a lot of food that's being received and then packed to make this happen. Yes, yeah, so it's great. We have our expert here. Yeah, so we have, 318,000 is the exact amount that we purchase for food. It's called our grocery line, right? Where do we get that food? We get a mix from local providers and also wholesale providers as well that are local. And we get that so we're able to have fresh produce year-round for folks. So when local farms are available, we'll get produce from them. When it's not available, we'll get it from wholesalers so we can keep the fresh produce going. In addition to that 318, we have about $1 million plus of in-kind food that we receive, mostly from Mercer Street Friends, but some from the food drives we've talked about. Does that make sense?
USDA?
Yes. Yes, through the local food bank. Mercer Street Friends is our local food bank. So they collect it, right, from those sources, and then we pick it up from them, and then we blend it with the food that we buy.
Hello, everyone. I'm so sorry to have to wrap this up, but I hear the masses have left.
They're coming,
worship.
They're coming.
Yes. So thank you so much, David, for all this wonderful information.
Sorry. Yep. Take a peek at it if you want.
Yeah.
Please, Valentine's for Food. There's a great match going on. Please participate if you're able, because we have some successful and really generous people here locally that are able to match that.
And next week, please return. Maureen will be here with another staff member from Arm in Arm, and also one of our mission committee members, Arthur, leading us both in a tour of Arm in Arm site downstairs, and we're going to do a hands-on project together to pack some snack bags. So please come back next week. Thank you so much.